Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to episode 391 of This Week in League. I'm Nate.
And I'm Jay.
And I'm Glenn.
What's happening, boys, Sunday night?
Feeling another tight. Sensational weekend of footy.
Oh my God. Was it fuck? It was, oh my, it was amazing. Volandi's rules are fucking tremendous. I know we wouldn't make a judgment on these until the end of the season, but I've got to tell you, I love these rules. They're fantastic. Volandi's rules, I'll tell you. Now, how are we going? Fucking school holidays over.
I know.
Back to the grind tomorrow, fellas.
Yeah, back to the real world.
We have to start waking up before 8 o'clock again.
I've only got one back tomorrow.
Mm. I wish I only had one back, but I got both back, so.
Yeah, I know. Well, look, the bonus was we did get an extra week.
Yes, we did.
We had that lockdown.
Yeah, I think we had a pupil free day coming up on that Thursday, and then so it was like they were only going to be there till Wednesday anyway. But then the Tuesday, Wednesday got locked off. So yeah,
that's it.
Awesome. Anyway, great round of football it was. And look, without any further ado, how about we actually get into it? The first game, Thursday night, Suncorp Stadium. Stepdad, you were in attendance.
Certainly was.
And the Penny Panthers 20 defeated the Brisbane Broncos 12. Kurt Capewell, Nathan Cleary, Matt Burton, try scorers. Cleary, 2 of 3 conversions, a penalty goal, and a 2-point field goal. And the Broncos, tries 2 to Vita Pangai Jr. and Ethan Bullimore. Jermaine Asako, 1 conversion and 1 penalty goal.
What an absolutely dominant performance from the Panthers over one of the powerhouse clubs of the NRL era. Like, arguably, one of the strongest opponents to come up against, in recorded history. You know, such a strong and proud history. But they weathered the storm and came home. It always reminds you, you go to games and, you know, as we said on the member-side, I think it was a member-side last week, one thing we all miss living in Sydney is that ability to go to so many live games of footy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the different perspectives that it gives you, what your team goes. And I remember last week I did mention that I was a little bit concerned about this game going in, A, because Penrith don't seem to play well up in Brisbane.
Mm-hmm.
And B, the trajectory of both of those teams was such that if there was a risk of Penrith having a little bit of complacency, it was an opportune time for the Broncos, who had been getting, you know, steadily better bit by bit by bit. And I feel that's kind of where they met, that Penrith went out there and just looked as if they expected for things to happen for them. I'm not sure how it came across on television, but geez, the Panthers just looked flat in a couple of key areas. Their line speed was nowhere near what it has been for the opening 5 rounds, and key guys like Kikau just seemed a little bit off, and some of the passing, especially when they made movements out to the left, was nowhere near as crisp as it had been. And to their credit, Brisbane's forwards really stood up and took it to the Panthers. As much as I fucking despise the cunt, Lodge had a pretty good game for the...
I'm going to go so far as to say I reckon that was probably the best game in his entire fucking first grade career.
I would...
That I can remember.
I tend to agree with you.
By far.
But fucking Pangai, he was an absolute monster that game.
And when you talk about guys like Corey Oates, Charlie Staines, Brian To'o on the field, for him to also be the best winger on the field was just fucking phenomenal.
And this is the thing. He did that, he had that sort of performance, the rarest of big men performances, where he's remembered that he's 9 times the size of a couple of guys out there, mm-hmm. and just decided that I'm going to make your life fucking miserable. Like, I'm going to make your life a living hell every time you get the ball. I'm going to be mm-hmm. on you. But to go with that, never looked like he was out of position. Like, there was never that instance where they saw him coming and stepped and there was a gaping hole where he should have been.
Yep.
So he made the plays when he needed to. Happily, though, I think in the end what got us home was a little bit of direction and stability, and that's where your Clearys and your Luais take over and really kept Penrith in the game. And fuck me, it was absolutely one of my proudest moments as a father that when that 2-point field goal went over, my 6-year-old stood up in his seat at Suncorp, turned around to everybody else in the Broncos section we were sitting at, and started screaming at the top of his lungs, "That's what you do! That's what you do! We own this place now!" And
what a little cunt did it.
Pointed his little blow-up fucking Panthers finger straight at a bunch of people that had been very lippy all night.
It's so good because like a 6-year-old can do that shit.
Yeah,
exactly. They're not going to get bashed. If you stood up on the seat though and said exactly the same thing, word for word, inflection exactly. for inflection, you would have been absolutely. You'd be fucking doing this from hospital.
Spot on. Yeah. But again, similar to the game we played up here last year, it's nice that we can have by far our worst game of the season. And by our standards, a terrible performance, still come home with the 2 points and still have a couple of positives to take out of it. On the downside, long term, fuck, we need Dylan Edwards back.
Yeah, I think this is the one that proved that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not even really the best short-term option, but he's, you got to.
That's it.
But the thing is, to
be undefeated at the top of the table, without your first choice hooker and without your first choice fullback,
it's impressive.
Is no mean feat.
And the thing about the Broncos, the Panthers did well to sort of take the opportunities when they came, and they weren't given too many, obviously. But like the other thing it highlighted was that although the Broncos' performance, the forwards were fucking great, like their just general roll on was great, and they were like the better team probably on 90 meters of the field.
Yeah,
but still. Offensively speaking, it's that they've got fucking less than nothing. Yeah. The real reason that Panthers managed to stay in that game was because the Broncos have got absolutely nothing, and they couldn't convert barely any of their numerous opportunities. And Penrith defended what they threw at them, but they weren't throwing anything at all. I mean, they didn't really have much except for what the forwards brought to the table.
That's it.
And if that's all they're going to be doing.
And again, Penrith's hands kept Brisbane in the contest.
Yeah, there was a fair few uncharacteristic errors, I thought, from Penrith, which is, yeah. I don't know if it was complacency or underestimating their opponent or just one of those nights, but there was just, I think we've just gotten so used to, certainly from a non-Penrith fans perspective, watching them, and just I've been so impressed over the last sort of 12 months with it just comes it, off.
Is there such a thing though?
Penrith's everyone's second team, mate.
Exactly.
But
everyone loves them.
They're definitely everyone's second team, because look, I've heard these people going, "Oh, they're fucking arrogant, blah, blah, blah." I'll have you know that they're fucking fine young men. To a man, that 17 players that Penrith trots out week in, week out are fine young men. I won't hear a fucking bad word about them. I mean, even the ones that fucking boot sluts and release sex tapes and record sex tapes again, you know, without permission and release them to people, fine young men, and I will not hear a bad word about it.
Fuck. That's out of character, Glenn, for you to be anti-artist.
Anti-artist?
Yeah. Aren't you all about that fucking creativity bullshit?
Yeah, but generally you have to get releases for your other people in your
fucking
videos.
Introduction for the next one. Welcome to This Week in League.
That's a deep cut.
Special mention, I thought, to Brian Toto. They targeted him. They went at him all night with kicks and. And I will say, as a young player, and he made a couple of errors, which, you know, the amount of work, but
the amount of work he had to do, because he was good for 80% of the time probably, but the first couple were fucked, and then so that's
not
the
once,
kept going back
not
to that
once
area,
did
you know?
He shy away from his work. Not once did he, you know, think, oh, I'm just going to take a step back here. And you know, even some really experienced guys will start letting shit bounce and fucking it'll get in their heads. And, you know, exactly. So I was really impressed with how he didn't back down from the fight. He really, really kept coming and kept going. Errors didn't deter, you know, a couple of errors didn't deter him. And for a young player, that's really impressive.
Mm. That's it. In our Facebook group, Hectic said, Nathan Cleary with ice in his veins. Not the usual ice someone from Penrith has, but close enough. Toto said, we have played one team in the bottom eight and smoked them. Went toe-to-toe with the best team in the comp last night. Maybe, just maybe, we wait till the end of the season to judge the Kevolution. There you go, Toto. Confirmed Kevy truther. Fucking hell, there we go. Lachlan, what's better than watching the Broncos have a cricket score posted against them, seeing them hope, seeing them believe, and seeing that ripped from them in their cauldron of cunts? What a wonderful Thursday night. Hashtag fuck the Broncos. Shunter, if Paul Momorowski could pass half as well as clubs pass him around, Charlie Staines wouldn't be on the side of an oak cart. James said, kudos to the Broncos tonight. They came out to play, almost got the ambush. They ran hard, defended hard, and their efforts tonight would have beaten most teams. And Super Grover on Twitter said, the Panthers are working so hard to prove they aren't arrogant. They are actually arrogantly losing to prove they aren't arrogant.
It's funny how you get that disconnect between social media and real life. And like you see a bunch of people in real life going, oh, look, you know, look at the Panthers. They're not arrogant. Look at them, how they just shook hands after that try. Not realizing that there's a whole world of social media and it had already been revealed how, like, that they were just trolling. That was going to be their troll response to the internet, you know?
Hammers. So credit where credit is due. TPJ put Brisbane on his back and dragged them out of utter shit. All for fuck all in the end, though. Hashtag fuck the Broncos. And to which, and I don't normally like doing replies here, but... OGJR_buff said, drag that team towards the light, and what was waiting for them at the light? Papal dick. Oh, fantastic.
I'll tell you, it's amazing how Capewell has come through that whole sordid fucking affair with everything intact, because not everyone does, and I wouldn't say most people do.
You know, no one's really had, you know what I mean, like that one, if you know what I mean. Like, that's a unique, it's a fairly unique one.
No, that's right, yeah.
Can I say that?
Probably helps that he was kind of the victim of it as well, but...
It does warm my heart. Just in. Like, that's one of those ones that I'm sure... He would have been terrified of, as would anyone that gets a sex tape released, but or blackmailed or whatever happened. But that was legit one that, you know, you'd think people would care about more than they do.
Yeah.
And there is still a fairly sizable homophobic current in parts of the game. Yep. Which are like, fuck, how does this go down?
Mm-hmm.
No one cares.
Yeah.
Like, okay, cool. You did some dumb shit when you were 20. Me too. You know, yours got taped.
So I didn't mind.
And you didn't know you were doing dumb shit at the time either. Like you knew there was a guy on the other side of that fucking hole.
Kurt, so yeah. Did mine. Oh,
you didn't get
it.
Paid like he did either. Like, yeah.
That's fucking brilliant.
You know what? Yours got taped. The one thing that still fucking drives me mental to this day is that that SBS thing is nowhere to be fucking found.
I know, hey.
It drives out like it's fucking crazy because like who would have known at the time?
It's because
to tape it or something, you know what I mean? Like
it was before digital. Like yeah. I reckon that's on like it'd be on a reel somewhere. If at all.
On a DATS something, yeah. In the archives, yeah.
And plus I don't think it actually rated that well.
But, no. They did have it on their digital stuff when that all happened at one point, but it wasn't when we thought that, you know, when we were talking about it you started being on the show. So it wasn't then, you know, anymore. But, and like you'd think even that sort of shit would find its way to YouTube, but no.
Yeah. The whole thing that made me saddest about that was, it was back when I thought that Academy Awards meant something. One of the cameramen, I don't know if it was the cameraman or it might have been the sound guy. Anyway, one of them had won Oscars for what was it? The thin, is it movie? Thin Red Line.
Yeah,
Thin Red Line. Like had worked on that,
mm-hmm.
And was you know is that Sean Penn that's in that movie? I think it's Sean Penn.
Anyway,
was used to working like with that caliber of person.
He's upgraded to you
on the other side.
And he's there doing something about two people duping the fucking hapless SBS people
and then
into getting on TV.
And this poor guy, you could literally see him sitting there thinking, what life choices have I made that led me to this point? Like, I have fucking Oscars on my shelf.
Yep.
But still, to this day, gave me the best parking advice ever.
Yeah. I'd get you to repeat it, but I think we've done that one many times over the last 5 years.
We'll do it again.
But so people go and listen to the old episodes, or fucking subscribe to Patreon and ask you on an episode. He'll tell you the parking advice. You've got to spend money to save money. The Newcastle Knights 26. To feed the Sharkies 22 at McDonald Jones Stadium. The Knights 26 came through a double to Callum Ponga. Mitch Barnett, Kurt Mann, Brody Jones tries. Ponga 3 of 5 conversions. Defeating the Sharks, whose 22 points came through tries to Ramian, Nikora, Tracy and Hirodi. 3 of 4 conversions to Chad.
That man, William Kennedy, for the Sharks. He gets better and more polished every week. Jeez, I'm impressed with him. He also is growing in confidence as well. You can see he's starting to get a lot more touches in key areas on the field, and his teammates are trusting him to really take the game by the scruff of the neck, and everything good that the Sharks are doing is starting to go through him. So it's really impressive to watch his game develop at such a rapid rate of knots as well. There was obviously a lot of hypes, not surprisingly, and a fair bit of talk around Kalen Ponga's game. But, you know, I think if the gap between this type of performance and some of his other games wasn't as large as the gap between him and plays he's trying to tackle one-on-one, he would have a lot less criticism. I think
that's a good
he
point.
Showed in this game the influence that he can have on games. You can't deny things that he did in this game, and it was impressive. And no one's ever really—I don't know that anyone's really doubted the ceiling of his talent. But it just seems, you know, we call it the hype train or whatever. But that gets pushed out so hard. But you know, there's areas of his game that he's still a young guy, and he's achieved. You know, he's played Origin and all the rest of it, but he's still got serious development in his game as a fullback, especially defensively. And, you know, maybe a little less time reading his own press. I think would serve him
offensively,
well.
Offensively, he delivered. This is a game where he delivered on what he was supposed to deliver.
Mm.
You know, he had some nice passing to for tries. He scored tries himself. I mean, one of them was just great backing up. You know, mm-hmm. one of them was himself. The problem is, even in this game, which was a win for his side, I mean, the absolute cowardice under the high ball is like he's rarely won a contest in his entire career, and a lot of the time is because he chooses not to contest.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like it's a liability in that thing, and so his complete game is not there. But I mean, offensively, I mean, if you're a Knights fan, you couldn't walk away from this game, without feeling like he had delivered what you expect of him.
But here's the thing, though. As one of the premier and highest paid fullbacks in the competition, that game, and not the double try performance, obviously. A double's a very, very difficult thing to do. But that level of involvement and impact on the offensive side of the board, that should be your baseline for him. Considering what you're paying for him, and considering that essentially you're building the team around him. Excuse me. What I would more like to fucking talk about is Jones for the Knights, who had an absolutely fucking stellar game.
Mm-hmm.
And God, I love it when guys come into a side and not only have to come and step up and fill a bigger role than they usually do, but do it like out of position or on the other side of the field, or just something that throws an extra spanner in the works. And fuck, that kid just took half a dozen things, and I'd love it when people do this, is that Melbourne way of doing things, and he just did it exceptionally all night. And that try he scored, essentially he Ponga owes him a beer this week, because on that play Ponga was just running himself towards the sideline, and he was exceptionally well covered. And if Jones hadn't have spotted how little space there was and come back on the inside for it, that just ends up as another dead play. And again, I don't want to hate on Ponga. He did have some very, very good moments. But God, I'd be super frothy over that Jones kid if I'm a Knights fan.
Just looking at Twitter, I think they well and truly were, yeah.
Yeah. I think Brody Jones, he's obviously got a huge future. He seems like a kid he's got that passion for the game. You see a guy come in and really he's one of those people that has been given an opportunity and he's willingly grabbed it with both hands and wants to run with it. But I think when he was being assembled as a human being, there was either room for footballing ability or a neck, and he couldn't have both. So he ended up with a footballing ability, but he's got a touch of the Gladstone Smalls about him, that's for sure.
Look, we've already established that BMOZ is probably the greatest winger that ever played the game. Also made the same deal. And his brother's not fine. And his brother's a great player too. I mean, he's not the BMOZ, but he's not a world behind either.
Yeah. So. Not a neck between them.
Nice one. Anyone got anything else to say on that one?
No.
Lovely.
No.
On Twitter, TheFormo96 said, "I swear this team takes a year off my life every time they play. Gutsy win. Better team won. Don't care what you say about Ponga. He was gutsy as tonight." At the angriest tiger said, "The Sharks remind me of my Tigers at our self-sabotaging worst." Oof. At Southo Dan said, "Fuck Chad." In our Facebook group, Woods, "I'm back. Lazy arm penalty, and he already looks gassed. Hashtag fuck the Broncos." Stephen said, "You know that feeling of confidence you get when you see a guy on your team who just exudes winningness? You look at him and you feel, yeah, we got this. Well, Aaron Woods gives me the exact opposite feeling." Jesse said, "Maybe John Morris wasn't the problem." There you go. And I'll leave this one with our good mate Clevo. He said, "That's twice in my life now that a grown man doing a diarrhea in their pants has embarrassed the entire Cronulla Sutherland region."
Yeah. That's a strategy for not wanting to get tackled, though, right?
What was the go there? Like, was it... I did see this on social media. It raises an interesting point, especially in this, you know, age of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
If you are confirmed to be suffering from a virus that is still affecting you so much that you are shitting yourself mid-game,
yeah,
are you playing? If you're the other club, it would. What if three players from the Sharks can't play this week because they have a virus? Because
they got amoebic dysentery.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I would like to think, you know, and believe that the NRL is a professional organisation, and I would like to think that perhaps that they need to at least provide a negative test to say, look, you know, the guy's got a virus, but
it's not COVID.
Yeah. But I don't know that for sure. I mean, that's just me wanting to think the best and light the candle.
Yeah, that's it.
Yep. You got any more comments you want to read out?
Nope. Right.
Storm, 20, defeat the Roosters, 4. Storm's 20 points came down at the Korean Housewife, of course. The Melbourne Storm's 20 came through tries to Papi, Hughes and Grant. Pappenhausen, 2 of 3 conversions and 2 penalty goals. The Roosters 4 came through a try to Ikuvalu, and that's it.
Now, how many of the people on the field could be currently playing for the West Tigers? Just
how many should be playing for the West Tigers?
Yeah, no. Interesting one on this, and again, you know, with the caveat that we say we'll wait till the end of the season to look at this. To everyone bitching and moaning about the new rules and what it's trying to do to the game, and it's speeding the game up and fatigues this, and it's not fair because my club couldn't recruit properly for the last 4 years. Wouldn't it be nice if this game, this Roosters versus Storm game, was the new, again, baseline for rugby league? Wouldn't it be nice that this is just the start and within a couple of years, teams will adapt and an absolutely fucking frantic, end-to-end, fast-paced version of rugby league is what's played 8 games every round?
Mm-hmm.
Fuck me. Like, that's just...
I don't hate it.
No. That was 2 teams absolutely going at each other, hammer and tongs, defending like their fucking lives depended on it. And it was really a case of who snapped first.
And it was just like two of those Storm tries were just a direct result of beautiful, you know, fast roll, you know, great roll-ons like the rules are supposed to promote, and then great selective, accurate passing and lines, you know, passing by Harry Grant and lines run by the Storm players. I fucking really, like, you know, the difference that he made in that game. Like, he wasn't great last week, but holy shit! Like, if this is his
first week back,
different world, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And this is him only being involved in the side, you know, for a couple of weeks and playing his second game.
Yeah.
So I'd hate to see how good he's going to look at the end of the season.
I think we've said before, you know, I think we can all agree that Brandon Smith is a great character. I think he's a solid footballer. But that performance from Harry Grant surely makes a mockery of the Storm, even considering playing Brandon Smith at 9.
Yeah.
I think Brandon Smith's going to have to be, if he's going to stay at the Storm, he's going to be
a 14 or something.
Yeah, he's going to be a 14 that they bring on, and he could replace, you know, anyone in the pack essentially and just play his brand.
Yep.
Yeah. Because Why would you take that off the field? He can play at 80,
yep.
And he can play at a high level for 80, yep. And he can defend in the middle for 80.
Yep.
And that's the level of service and play that you get from your starting hooker. You don't fuck with that.
Well, maybe they will do that because they can.
Yeah.
You know, to have that rotation available, to have Harry to be able to go on when everybody else is half fucked.
Yep.
And take advantage. Who knows?
And it's not unheard of either. I mean, like, you know, the golden years of Manly. I mean, Matt Ballen, one of the fittest fucking guys to ever take the field. There's never any question about him being able to do 60 tackles and play for 80. But there was that years, they did run the pinch hitter things where they would put Heath Lestrange on and things like that for like 15 minutes, 20 minute stint, you know.
Fair enough, as maybe it becomes more of a strategy and a different look.
Yeah.
But you're right. If you have to pick between the two of them, like if salary cap becomes an issue or pressures like that become an issue,
sure.
And if Brandon Smith gets out of that Storm mentality where he ceases to want to be a guy that plays a role and maybe plays 30 minutes a game, and he wants to be an 80 minute nine starting for a side, you know.
Yeah, that's it.
And I feel he may have a touch of that.
What do you think of the Roosters halves? The week after their grand unveiling.
I didn't think they were horrible. I think, you know, they're both young. I think they're going to have some ups and downs, but, like, I don't know. They seem quite level-headed for their age to me, but you know, we've only had a very brief look at them, but there's nothing erratic, and that comes down to the coaching, I guess, but there's nothing, you know, they seem to be the type of players that are both quite grounded and, you know, and willing and able, more importantly, to play to a structure that's laid out for them and not overplay their hand, which in that Rooster side is important.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, okay. I think it was interesting just the amount of traffic they had run at them. And, yeah, again, obviously Bellamy, try and find a better strategist.
Yeah,
but they did not get a rest all fucking night. And it'll be interesting to see if other teams take a leaf out of his book when they come across the roof.
Well, I guess, you know, welcome first grade, eh? That's what they're going to have to deal with.
That's it. Anything else on that one?
Not from me.
Lovely. On Twitter, at Origin Affected, said Storm played vintage Storm ball, gave the Roosters nothing to do but tackle in the first half, turned it on when it mattered in the second. Some gamesmanship in the HIA department by the Storm with Paps and Grant, but that's part of the game now. Thoughts on Pappenhausen and Munster not being HIA?
I don't love it. I think it probably takes away from the reason the rules are in place. But, you know, again, it comes down to how the NRL police it and teams. It's no different to wrestling in the ruck or, you know, different things as the game adapts. You know, teams look for a tactical advantage, and I don't morally, I'm not a fan of it, but teams are going to do it. I think we have to rely on the NRL to police it effectively.
Well, look, you know, I think true to form, Melbourne being the most the closest city outside of America to fucking Portland, it's nice now that in the spirit of opportunity of outcome, they're trying to cripple their own players as well as others. So,
end of the day, the rules are there. The Storm have always been known to walk up to the line and sort of just, you know, peek over it as far as that, you know, as much as they can. And so, the thing is with, like, you know, if the provision's made for the substitutions, then that's their own rules. The thing, like the HIA thing, it's just a test that needs to be administered, and it's really subjective until they receive that test. So you can always just say, look, you know, we care about our players so much that we got to, you know, we're going to take advantage of this interchange, but we're going to test them, because maybe
that's it.
And then you start, and then it becomes not so much like this flagrant, like actual rule breaking. It becomes this subjective pushing, you know, this subjective interpretation of what they're doing that can't really be disproven unless they come out and say it, which they did. They're fucking idiots, but
yeah, true.
I mean, if you never admit to it, it's not something you can get done for.
You've got to keep all your employees gruntled.
Exactly. No whistleblowers.
That's it. At Lambretta GP 1971 said the Roosters' attack against the Storm isn't a patch on the Bulldogs' effort last week. Handsome Trent 1, Elephant Man Trent 0.
Elephant man, Trent.
At Warriors Suck Balls. Said Storm just got their mojo back and the rest of the league should be worried, especially Panthers who got beat everywhere but on the scoreboard by fuck the Broncos. Poor Warriors have to play them in 8 days and it's going to be like Anzac Cove 1915 for us.
And by that he means that the Warriors would go out to a massive lead to the point where the game's won, and then some British person decides to fucking not back them up, so they eventually get pushed back and lose. I mean,
I was gonna say that the Kiwis would maybe be in the same vicinity, and then just live off the stories of Australians for the next 100 years.
Well, that was the big surprise. Like when I was over at Gallipoli, when you actually walked the battlefield and everything, the Kiwis got further than anyone did, but the British never came to back them up because they were having a cup of tea down the bottom, and so they got pushed back. They literally could have been over because of the speed that the Kiwis actually made ground. But
okay. So fucking shiftless poms. The New Zealand Army. He's like David Nofaluma in defence. don't rush up, cunts. No,
like David Nofaluma in general, like fucking handy in attack. But when it comes to defence, yeah. And they don't have Sam Tompkins there to blame the English anymore, So.
Oh, hashtag respect the troops.
Are you done?
Yeah, that's done.
Saturday games. The mighty Manly Seagulls 36 defeat the Titans 0 out there at Mudgee. And Manly's 36 came through a double to Ruben Garrick. Tries to Brad Parker. A double to Jason Saab. Tommy Turbo with a try as well. Garrick, 5 of 6 conversions and a penalty goal. The Gold Coast Titans, nothing.
All you, Nate.
All right. Let's get this over with.
Strap your fucking selves in.
Everything I said was right. Everything everyone else said was wrong. I fucking told you. I fucking told you, motherfuckers, that this was going to happen. And no one believed me. All I'm going to say, it's there in fucking black and white now. Now, all jokes aside, I mean, a fucking extremely pleasing effort. And it wasn't just the Tommy Turbo thing. I mean, he was back. He played very well, contributed, nicely, set up some stuff. Obviously, it was pleasing to see him like really stride out on some breaks as well, and like not seeing, he wasn't being cautious of re-injury or anything. I mean, he was going flat out, and it was great. That was all great to see. But his actual involvement was not nearly as much as people are making out. Whether he's just got this fucking, like, he just brings this lucky charm confidence to the rest of them or whatever, the rest of them did the fucking work. Like, they actually did the thing. So the forwards were fucking amazing. Garlic Sauce was a fucking great buy. I have to say thank you so much to Justin Pascoe for trying to force a scenario with fucking, I've seen that meme already, sorry. But Pascoe once again trying to swing his dick and fucking coming out with us with a great fucking forward who's performing amazingly well. The rest of the forwards great. And I loved the way that they handled Fifita, and they put some of the better defenders out there. They put Kepi out there sometimes. They put a front rower out there. And the end result was that Fifita had a semi-Taumalolo-esque game. Like, he did okay. Like, he got about 150 metres. Like, it wasn't an awful performance. But where it counted, and, like, where he absolutely dismantled the Knights the week before, he had fucking nothing. He never had a moment's peace when the ball was coming towards him. He was wrapped up immediately, and he never looked like doing any sort of damage, outside of just forward grunt work. Morgan Harper, I'm fucking so glad. I'm glad he got... he only got his opportunity through injury to Suli, but... Fuck, he has taken both hands, and I love the fact that now they realise after that try last week that Jason Saab scored, that he's one of the fastest fucking guys in the competition. So let's see how we can harness that speed, and just the way that, like, now everyone's like, he's doing the work in backing up and be putting himself in position, and now people are looking for him and dishing to him super early so he can just fuck off and just, you know, stream away and score the tries. Just fucking pleasing. I mean, even things like fucking Ruben Garrick was banging him over from the touchline, like, pretty much every time. Like, it was weird fucking, like, everything came together. Kieran Foran looked back. Like, I mean, the pass that he threw to put fucking to put Garrick in for a try was fucking vintage fucking Foran. One of the things that I've been saying the last couple of weeks is I love Josh Schuster, how he just throws these fucking no look passes. But mate, there's no first graders out to your left. You've only got Garrick and Parker out there. Puts Tommy Turbo in, and Tommy Turbo, he does the no-look Tommy Turbo, boom, instant try. Like, I mean, so once these combinations develop further, it's going to be fucking fantastic. And in the second half, there was a period where they did their shit that they normally do. I mean, they were dropping the ball 40 metres out, fucking 20 metres out, 30 metres out, giving the Titans plenty of opportunities to attack from short range and begin their sets from short range. But again, marshalling the defensive line, they've got the guy that actually fucking assigns everyone their jobs. The Titans only looked like likely to breach them once, and that was that time when Proctor nearly scored that try, but he dropped it. I mean, he would have scored had he not dropped the pass. But that was the only time the Titans even looked like breaching them the entire game. So I mean, it was pleasing to get the best attacking performance of the week out of them. It was they got the best defensive performance, holding a team to zero. Who would have thought? 2 weeks ago, 1 week. Who would have thought? Not me.
On Twitter.
Glenn, you got any thoughts, Glenn? You must.
I just wanted to make a point on the Titans. I think, you know, I've actually been pretty impressed with how they've been going so far this season. But the most concerning thing to take away for the Titans, even more so than the result itself, was I think that when things started to go south, it was the lack of resilience in them, and they didn't have an answer to try and stop the roll. And, you know, I don't think their bigger name players were able to step up and really, you know, stop the bleeding, so to speak. I think that's another part of the Titans' development. I think, you know, as I said, I think they're a good side. I think there's a fair bit of talent in there, and I think they're well coached, but that's going to be part of their, you know, that resilience and coaching that into them is going to be important as the season goes on if they're going to reach that potential that I think they have.
I like to watch the press conferences afterwards after we win to see what the opposition coach has to say for himself. And I got to say, I was super impressed with Holbrook. I mean, there's a reason why he's turned that team around, because he didn't come out and fucking carry on like Ricky Stewart does. And he didn't fucking bitch about anything. He's just like, look, I don't think it mattered if Tommy Turbo was there or not. Everyone was up. They did a fucking job. We've got to be better. Like, it was refreshing to see a coach not have something to fucking bitch about, but actually sort of speaking kind of openly. Yeah, the other thing as well, I mean, remember back, you know, that Origin, it's almost like a meme, like legendary status now. I can't remember what year it was, but remember when they had like the whoever the fucking trainers were for New South Wales, and there was that whole thing when Chris Walker was getting on the field, and it's like, you know, Walker's on.
Yeah, yeah.
And the terror they had of like whatever Chris Walker, I mean, you think, you look back now and you think, why? How would that happen? But that sort of vibe was what the Titans had about Tommy Turbo, so much so that even when he wasn't involved in a play at all, just the fact that he pushes up off the shoulder of everybody through the middle means that the Titans, either side, they just had this terror about them which created opportunities. Like Lachlan Croker, the fucking not best, he's about as not best hooker as you could be in this entire fucking game of rugby league. But the fact that he can run up with Turbo looming on his left shoulder, so much so that the Titans shit themselves and forgot about Croker, and he just ran straight through and went on a fucking 40 meter trot to set up a try. It was just fucking crazy. Anyway, I'm done.
Nice. That's nice. The Bunk 2099 said the Titans would have gone into that game expecting a win. To lose and not score will destroy them mentally. They will lose 13 plus next week. Bold. At Bebe Campbell said, I'll drive to Mudgee every week if we'll play like that all the time.
Damn straight, moving to Mudgee.
That's it. Voodoo Rock Said beating teams we're expected to lose to and losing to teams we're expected to beat. Only thing we've ever been consistent at. Interesting.
Sounds familiar.
Ben said, Nate called it, totally cucked the Titans hype train. Could this mean the declining Tigers have reached their lowest wins? Will win. I don't understand what that one fucking means. Nort.
Thank you for reading it out though.
The first half of that, I was so on board with the first half of that.
I did. I need to admit, I did only read the first half, and I put it in there because I thought, oh, that'll make Nate feel good. Someone's fucking on his side, but now it looks like all the people that are on Nate's side. Fucking
I was going to say, the second half sounded like someone that would be on Nate's side.
Nortz said, poor game today by Antonio Bramble and the Titans. And Fat Harry Lazy said, Queensland's best teams being torn apart by a pair of dodgy hamstrings. You love to see it. Ouch.
I'm loath to give that man any credit, but fuck, he had some quality Twitter action over the weekend.
Oh, I tell you, impressed. Steve, aka One Eyed Tiger, on Twitter. I think he's actually, I mean, he may have changed it. He's like One Eyed MCU fan or something like that. Anyway, that whole fucking creation of that set of memes where he's decided to take your best comment or what he deems your best or funniest or most idiotic comment of an episode.
I feel like it puts me under pressure.
And in creating a lion meme out of it,
it's fucking that fantastic.
Whole enterprise, and then week two comes around and like another fucking half a dozen people throw ones in that they've done as well. I swear, I don't even want to put the revelation of the 2021 NRL season on the Twillies this year. I'll crown that motherfucker right now. Because
thank
that shit,
you. I'll accept it. Oh wait, you weren't talking about
that shit. That shit is hilarious, and I can't wait to see them week in, week out for the next like fucking however, you know, 4 or 5 months. Because they are
fucking
just
bring it on. I breathe it in like fucking oxygen. I love it. Eat it up. It's good times.
You breathe it in like oxygen.
Yes.
You eat little pieces of shit for breakfast.
Doesn't everyone breathe oxygen in? Isn't that just like something that's common for everyone to do?
It's lovely. It gives me life. At all?
Jay, I put it to you that the human body does it automatically. It's not even part of our conscious action.
I think I just created the next meme.
Do you know the worst thing, though? You think you have, but the next one's going to be just a bunch of fucking spazzy looking Tigers going, I think I've just created the next meme.
And also I'd like to highlight to you guys that we're only now about to talk about the Tigers game. Who knows what else comes out at this point.
Oh, let's do it, please.
The Rabbitohs 18 defeat the West Tigers 14 at Stadium Australia. The Rabbitohs 18 came through tries to Murray, Gagai and Thomas Burgess. Reynolds with two conversions and another 2-point field goal. The Tigers 14 came through tries to Laurie and Garner, Dewey with two conversions and a penalty goal. Now, I just, like, put me in a time machine, take me back to 3 days. If you had sat me down in a polygraph and said, do you think you could possibly see a West Tigers game finish in such satisfying NRL chaos as the 100-minute legendary game ever again? Do you think anything could happen like that level of fucking amazing NRL chaos? And
how would you rank them?
And as a and as a fucking hashtag NRL chaos fucking aficionado, I've got to say I would have called you a goddamn liar if you said you could have found something. But fuck me dead. This was chef's kiss, fucking amazing chaos. Glenn, you have the floor before Please. We start talking about that glorious ending.
Look, only the West Tigers could lose a game like that. That only a West Tigers game would finish like that is probably the better way to put it. But before I get to the ending, let me just start by saying that, you know, you might have told people about Manly playing better and stuff like that. But as far as people telling people about stuff, I fucking told you guys about Jake Simpkin. I told you. I told all of you.
Did he win?
And look how we fucking went.
Who was it, Marco, when Burgess ran through?
Look, I'm pretty sure it was Jake Simpkin. He was pretty tired after making 58 tackles, and he's a 19-year-old kid.
He's not quite up there, Robbie. what he defeats Robbie Farrier of in terms of attack and service, he lacks in terms of making 160 tackles a game.
I think the real question is, who's influencing the hookers at the Tigers?
You could call him the next Robbie Farrier.
I'm pretty sure Robbie's taken him under his wing, and that little effort was evidence of that. If you're going to have a response to being booed off your spiritual home ground in a memorial game for a legend, I think that, you know, the effort and the way they played in that game goes a long way towards it. I think the next part is what they do in coming weeks. 1 week is not going to be enough. And to be honest, we've seen that before. They've performed horribly or been on, you know, had rough patches of a season and then put in a spirited performance. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, that needs to be our baseline. And then it's a long time before that sort of performance is seen again. So I think
it is
that, you know, Dane Laurie was great again. Already mentioned Simpkin. Dewey was massive. And I think we're starting to see Dewey take more of an upper hand as far as the halves go.
I put it to you that he took nowhere near a fucking enough of an upper hand in this game. after the incredible success that he had, you know, with these, you know, these bombs last week, when shit and came down, it was all Brooks. Yeah. They weren't giving it to him for that shit.
Yeah, I think more in a directional sense for the team, which I don't know that that's a positive, because the whole thing with giving Luke Brooks the keys after, you know, and shunting Benji out of the club was so he could take that role only five or six weeks in to realise that maybe that wasn't the greatest decision. But to get to the ending, I will say, hand on heart, that when we were up 14-12, I must admit, I wasn't thinking 2-point field goal. I was thinking a fucking shit ruck penalty, or, you know, a shit penalty to gift them a goal in front to tie it up. That's honestly what I was thinking. So this is the inner workings of a Tigers fan. And going to Golden Point, we've got a fucking horrible record in Golden Point. And that continues. Yeah,
you've got a fucking horrible record generally. Like, it's not just in Golden Point.
Golden Point still is games of rugby league.
Yeah.
Sometimes the pain's less if it's just over after 80 minutes and you don't have to go to 80 fucking five.
Right. Talk me through Golden Point. Burgess has just made the break. Let's go.
Oh, fuck.
Dramatic
reenactment. Walk me through your emotions.
My first reaction was, how the fuck did he get through there? Yeah. Was my first reaction. Then I was like, as much as I love Dane Laurie, don't know that he's pulling him down. Then I was like, did he just fucking drop that? Then I was like, surely he didn't fucking drop it. Then I was like, Luke Brooks is fucking running up the field. And then the camera caught up and his little legs were going a million miles an hour and no one was around him and everyone had stopped and half the crowd's going berserk and the other half doesn't really know what the fuck's going on. I watch him put the ball down and I think it was Roberts was there and he was congratulating. I was like,
yep.
Has he picked it up and run and scored? And then you're trying to catch up with the commentary. I was like, I'm sure, but surely Burgess has got that ball down. But then you're like, it's Tom Burgess. Maybe he did drop it. It's not beyond him.
Tom Burgess literally drops it every fucking time he's ever done that. He's dropped it. Yeah. Every time.
Yeah.
Without exception.
So it was a fucking tidal wave of emotion. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, surely we haven't pulled that out.
And you've got to remember at this point, the referee catches up to the play, awards the try, and it's almost like 18-14 Tigers at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. What if, like, is there a way, if there was a way that you could fuck all the review off and just kick the goal real quick and the sorry, you know, that's the end of the game and just
remember
fucking
how they
hook
did
it
that
back
when they tried
to, hook
they
it
tried
back to the dressing sheds.
Remember when they tried the rule at the end of last season? And it was kind of like if you could fucking bust the goal off real quick.
Yeah. Like, or decline the kick.
But But now they've
exactly.
now
well, it's golden
like,
point.
No,
you don't need to kick it. Just that's fucking it. Hook it back to the dressing sheds.
So
fuck your review.
Tell me, as Luke Brooks was running the length of the field, brackets, for no fucking reason whatsoever, what song was playing in your head? Because in mine was that classical music wonder in the Hall of the Mountain King.
I've got no fucking idea what you're talking about.
He's fucking trudging up the field. All I'm hearing is...
He was sprinting like an elite athlete that he is.
It's fucking hilarious.
It was a heads-up play. Ball was still alive. He did the right thing. And could have been the hero. Wasn't. Story of Luke Brooks' career, really. That's going to be the name of Luke Brooks' fucking autobiography.
In the interest of lighting the candle, I want to say, like, we give a lot of shit to Luke Brooks, obviously, over the last 2 minutes as an example of that. But fucking good on him for playing the whistle and actually being present in mind, because the rest of his fucking team had their heads
stopped.
Down, we've lost. He's picked the ball up and actually had the fucking presence of mind to play the whistle and keep going. The only reason Roberts was on the scene is because Roberts is fast as fuck, and he was like, oh, woke up and then, you know, started running as well. Yeah. And so, it didn't come off, but, like, then you look at the replays and, like, Burgess was so fucking close. If they had said he dropped that and it was no try and the Tigers win, I would have had no problem with it. Yeah. I mean, that was loose as shit, and it was 100% coming away, you know, from his hand.
But
if the ground was 10 centimetres further away, he's dropping it 10 times out of 10.
But you've seen him give tries when there's a fucking, your pinky nail on
removing
the dimples on the footy. And
yeah, but then I've also seen him disallowed because they've lost control of the ball and have not regathered it before it's seen.
Yeah, and like now when removing the requirement for downward pressure and things like that does allow more for that sort of stuff to go through without being disallowed. But
what did you think of the incident of that grubby cunt kicking someone in the head and facing absolutely no repercussions for it as well? And by that I'm referring to Tigers number 6, Adam Dewey.
I knew there would be a punchline.
Well,
I didn't see the Dewey one.
Well, he was the only person that kicked someone in the head.
Right. Missed it.
Okay. Fair enough.
Latrell, though, looking like, 3 to 4 weeks if he's...
they were talking 3 weeks today on the news report I saw.
I mean, with multiple incidents to answer for.
Look, at the end of the day, I think the kicking out at Garner would have been a whole lot... You know, he would have been in store for a whole lot more had he made, like, serious contact.
And also
like
the kicking out thing as well.
Studs right in between.
Yeah, and kicking out as well. I mean, like, when you're that far out of the play, fucking let go of the guy.
Yeah.
That's
the thing.
I think that saves
him. There's something to be said for that. He doesn't, if he hasn't got hold of his boot, he doesn't, you know, aggression or not, he doesn't, there's no need to do it. I think he's also... The contact on Nofaluma off the ball was pretty ordinary, and he probably does deserve to go for a few weeks for that.
Yep.
Well, no, because anyone hitting Nofaluma at any stage,
I don't know.
Should get Dally M points.
I don't think he deserves to be physically harmed because he reads defense poorly.
They did a fairly good job of hiding him though, in this game. Multis were destroyed.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that you can change him from left to right every week or back and forth and catch people unawares. I think it was pretty smart coaching, but that's a one trick.
I think Madge needs to be fucking hauled before some sort of fucking tribunal for doing that and not telling us. I mean, that's got to violate some sort of fucking inside gambling trading laws.
No, so whilst I was impressed with the you know, the improved performance and the effort, you don't get points for effort.
No, you don't.
You get points for wins. But I will say the only asterisk on that is if it's that type of performance for 1 week, it means fuck all. So if that's how we play for the rest of the season, I think we'll be in good stead. But let's see how they go over the next month or so.
Did you get your letter from Kapawa, fucking James Tamau?
Yeah. Yeah, lovely.
I read like three words and deleted it because those cunts are still sending me fucking emails like 8 years later.
Stop paying your membership, mate.
Believe me. Did I even pay it that year? I can't remember.
No, it's
not. God damn.
I've, and plenty of other Tigers fans have had plenty to say about AJ Kapoa, but he's been ruled out for the season with an ACL in that game. So, and to be honest, he was playing his natural position off centre, and I don't think he was going horribly, but he's gone for the year.
Ouch. Daniel in the Facebook group said the ending of this game could be summed up with a hashtag. Just can't remember it, though.
Good. Neither can I.
Dylan said, do the Tigers try and find more embarrassing ways to lose each week? That is the most Tigers ending of all time.
No, it's not. It's probably third.
At Devonhead.
Second for me.
Yes, fuck it.
Said, fucking universe talks to us in different ways. Driving home from New South Wales, something told me to open up Foxtel Go for Golden Point. Didn't disappoint. Can't spake. Long live rugby league and PVL ball.
When the universe talks to him, it speaks in oinks.
And Switzerben at B.43 said, Luke Brooks wasted 100-metre run is my drug. our friend at 88888 account said the NRL can't boot the Tigers. Their meme value as a club exceeds the value of State of Origin. And Christy Wilson on Twitter said, Souths fan, happy for the win. Miss Dewey at Souths, a calm player with a good boot. Madge is so intense, I don't think he likes coaching. That may not be far from wrong.
I don't think he fucking likes anything. If
you
were coaching the
Tigers, you probably wouldn't like coaching at all either.
I mean, knowing that this guy is a coach who's won a fucking premiership as a coach, I still say there's not been a single moment in his life where he's experienced joy. I just don't fucking think it's in him.
Yeah, nah.
In a competition where there's a coach named Ricky Stewart, how can you be like still a genuine fucking contender to be the most sour cunt in the league?
Oh, fucking Michael McGuire is salt of the earth human being. How fucking dare you try and sell his name?
Salting the earth at Leichhardt. the Eels 35 defeat the Raiders 10, GIO Stadium, Canberra. And the Eels, let's see. We got Papali'i with a double. Sivo, Lane, Marnie, and Gutherson with tries. 5 of 6 conversions for Mitchell Moses and a disrespectful field goal. The Raiders tries to Rapina and Williams. Croker, 1 conversion. Jay.
One thing I noticed on this one was today on the Fox coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Canberra's hookers sitting there in the studio fucking talking about other games. Now, I know he had a very, very serious injury that he's come back from, but fuck me, that cunt is not who he was when he left.
No, he was a legitimate, like, liability.
Yeah.
And and honestly, this game is the first game where he hasn't been like that all season, though. I mean, it just seemed really pronounced in this game, and I feel like for me, it was like, holy fuck, he's fucked.
Like it, Where did this come from? And I've seen lots of people mention it, but it was handbrake level in attack.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been like this, but he hasn't been his best. Yeah. I think the contrast was that people just expected him to get back to his best or somewhere near his best. Because again, cast your mind back, it was that same situation of, well, if he was an Aussie, You'd almost go so far as you would have picked him in Origin ahead of Cook.
Mm.
Yeah.
When he had that fantastic season.
He was going like 2019, that whatever, well, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. But that run first and that speed first attitude just doesn't seem to be there, and it's an absolute fucker of an injury to come back from. But I just thought it was an interesting thing. And again, it's just because it's so counter to me and how I operate, that if you're struggling that badly, what are you doing sitting around in commentary team with other people?
Yeah.
Just as a mouthpiece, but
I anticipate that these things are kind of like, you know, booked in advance and not the, you know.
Well, if you're Canberra, do you have any current players you're letting go out on a Sunday afternoon?
Yeah.
To have media duties? Is that in his contract or is that his manager doing something?
Yeah.
Who knows? But what a bounce back by Parra after a couple of weeks where they probably would consider that underperformed. To really come back and play some of that up-tempo in your face style of footy.
Yeah, their forwards really obviously relished the challenge against the Canberra pack and fed it to them, really, I thought.
Yeah, certainly got did.
Right over the top of them. Mm. Moses.
And some of these...
You go, mate.
Sorry, mate, go for it. I was going to say, so some of these younger Parramatta players who over, you know, last year had come up and really started to demand that people take notice. You read Marnie's, those sort of guys, are starting to just settle into their role and starting to settle into some consistency.
Yep.
So whilst there's still going to be some ups and downs in that side, the more they play together, I think the more cohesive they'll get and the more of a threat they'll be.
I think Moses, he had a hand in everything. The Eels did well, I thought, and turned a pretty competitive game up to half time into a reasonably comprehensive win for Parra by the end. I think his consistency above all, you know, as you just mentioned, Jay, you know, some of these other guys that are starting to find consistency, I think Moses finding that is the key to Parramatta's season. He's, you know, and I made a similar comment about Ponga earlier, just bridging that gap between his best performance and his worst. And he can tend to get into his own head at times and do himself out of, you know, solid games of football if things aren't going his way early or teams are getting at him defensively. So the other point I wanted to make about Parra is Papali'i, like that guy would have to be easily within the top three or four best buys of the season so far, early days, but he is.
I don't understand why the Warriors even let him go. Like, they let him go.
He wasn't horrible there by any stretch, I thought. At the
Warriors. He was fucking good there. Like when they started talking about this Fanua Blake shit going to the Warriors, I was like, you know what? Get him as fucking compensation. Just do a straight, you know, straight. I'll take it any day. I wanted him to come to Manly fucking badly, and holy shit, he's been amazing. Like, he certainly exceeded. I saw some stats come up for him, I think, during this telecast, and, like, he's exceeded his output, you know, in 5-6 rounds versus what he did last year. So while he wasn't terrible at Warriors, I mean, he's fucking lifted it to another level this year.
That's it.
Tweets?
On this one, at Troy_79. Said, it's safe to say after tonight's performance, the Raiders' premiership window is well and truly closed.
Oof.
Fuck, giving up on them already. At J Bartley 90 said, our Papali'i is better than your Papali'i. Wasn't he just? Lee in the Facebook group said, looks like the Raiders have gone back to default settings as average at best. And Joshy said, fuck me, Sivo seems to have all the ability but no talent, footy smarts to execute. Someone told me I'm wrong. That's it. Ben said, no fade there. That was just shit. Hodgson is a handbrake. That was one of the handbrake comments. Daniel said, that was a dominant second half. Great bounce back after last week. Terry said, the Raiders players showing less respect to the Raiders than the Panthers did last week. And final word on that one, we'll give to legend Timmy McIntyre, greatest stand-up comedian in Australia. Said, Parra fans
were, who was actually down there at that game too, yeah. He was actually at the game, yeah.
Parra fans were doing the Viking clap after the disrespectful field goal.
Get your phone out, mate, for that shit. Get your phone out and record it for us. Righto, the Warriors moved to today. The Warriors 20 defeated the Dragons 14 in the Giannis Levius Cup clash. And the Warriors 20 came through tries to Torhu Harris, Paul Turner, and RTS. Nick Reimer, 3 of 3 conversions and a penalty goal. The Dragons 14 tries to Ramsey, Rabalawa, and Dufty. Lomax, 1 of 3 conversions. Glenn.
I think the Warriors showed some real grit and fight to close this game out. They finished the game with 100% completion rate, which is pretty remarkable, especially for a side that, you know, you wouldn't say that the Warriors have ever been renowned for discipline and ball control. Generally, there's a bit of flash and flair to their game, which can lead to errors, but I think it probably speaks to some of the development to their game and, you know, changing up the way they play in certain areas. There's a bit more focus on making sure that they're playing through that middle third of the field rather than, you know, slinging it left and right. So they're the Dragons, again, going to Dufty, I think he had some good moments. I think Clune is performing, for mine, he's starting to look comfortable and performing better than I expected, to be honest, filling Hunt's shoes in the halves. He ultimately, RTS is, I've spoken about his leadership a couple of times over the course of the season so far, and I think what he's doing now is, you know, he's leaving, you know, he's going to leave a really solid legacy at the club with the way that he's performing and leading the team and how he's going about his business, not just spectacular pieces of play, but he's got a real calming and, you know, lead by example type presence on the field, which is important for the Warriors. And I was impressed with the Warriors in this game.
Anything you want to add there?
No, it's covered off. Nathan said, at least St. George meetings have complimentary Mars bars, Josh. Hashtag, Sheck is love, Sheck is life. Zoran said, is the Dylan Napa trade still available? I'd like to trade Norman for him, please. Norman at his best. Leading by 2 and takes a short dropout. He should be the poster boy for the effects of hard cocaine use on the brain.
that wasn't fucking great. Like, there's a time and place for that sort of shit. Mm. And unless you're playing for a team coached by the Walker brothers.
Yeah.
That's it. Use it when you need it.
Said, oh, look, it's that goddamn fucking Mars bar and the black belt again. Can't say I missed those two. Sharky Dave said, bit disappointed in the Dragons. They usually wait till Anzac Day to shit the bed. Ouch. At Appa Yip Yip 44 said, I've never thought Corey Norman was a Mensa candidate, but a short dropout when you're only up by 2 or 10 to go is some straight up simple jack shit. There's a theme there. At King Levius. Fuck. Oh, what was the Avi bet today? Another one? Have to go and have a look after this.
You've seen it, haven't you?
No.
This time it wasn't bannable. It was a little bit off, but it wasn't bannable. It was DMX with the angel wings, and then it was with a crack pipe, and like the dragons were over his head. The dragon's emblem was on his face, and the crack pipe had like the Warriors logo on the end where it would be burning. So it was basically, yeah.
Okay.
The dragons died of an overdosing on the Warriors, essentially.
Fair enough. Gotcha. So Levius said, boys are going to use this win as fuel. We stood up to a team red hot on form and made the plays that needed. Going to roll into next week with so much confidence that we'll only lose to the Storm by 30 on Anzac Day instead of 50. Warriors suck balls, said Rocks and Diamonds. Dragons fans will say that was Rocks and Warriors were shiny, glittering all the way to the RTS-inspired win. Hashtag Hiku Haiku. MCL strain rehabbed. Peter starts on wing. Ouchie shoulder, poor bastard.
Is that it?
Love it.
Okay, wrapping up, last game. The Cowboys, 30. defeated the Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs 18 up there at the Abattoir. The Cowboys, tries to Felt, Robson, Condon, Granville and Mitchell Dunn. Holmes, 5 of 5 conversions. Doggies, tries to Atoni, Flanagan and Katoa, Tui Katoa. Flanagan with the conversion and Avarillo with 2 from 2 as well.
Mm.
Who wants to start this one off?
Does anyone?
This is fucking horrible. This horrible game.
The end.
Look, this game was absolutely fucking AIDS for the first half. Mm. It was exactly the type of game you would expect from two sides in their positions on the ladder, and not just their positions on the ladder, but the way they've gone about their games. I mean, the Cowboys had that brief flash like in the first half last week where they were amazing, but the Dogs haven't. They've had nothing recommending them offensively. They've had 3 of the fucking 6 games where they haven't even fired a shot. Defensively, they haven't been great either, and this game delivered on everything. But then all of a sudden, it strangely fucking came alive in the second half. Yeah. After Hetherington, who is the new loosest dumb cunt in the league by a fucking the length of the straight. Mm. I remember he did it last year on Marty Tapau in a game. Yeah, same thing. He got away with it. This one, he did not get away with it, and was sent from the field. And at that point, the Cowboys almost immediately scored a quick try to go ahead. I think it was 24-6 at that point. And you're like, well, here we go. Here comes the Cowboys will put on a bit of a score. They'll get the confidence and from there. But the Doggies fucking strangely, they then lifted at that point and they made a fucking great game of it. And like, I don't know who to give credit to. I don't know if it was the Cowboys were just tired. It happened. The Cowboys weathered it.
Yeah.
In the end, losing's a habit. And
I just don't know what to fucking make of it. Like, the Cowboys obviously are a team that's ripe to be picked apart by any of the sides, that have a bit of a shape to them and attacking structure. They're not good defenders. The Cowboys also squandered a fuckload of good ball position just with weird passes, like pushing passes to guys that were about to get smashed, put passes behind guys so that where opportunities close really quickly. But in all of that, though, Valentine Holmes probably played his best game in fucking ages.
Yeah, so, he had some good touches.
I'm not saying he's back, but he looked. This was his best game by far, I reckon, since he's come back into the sport.
Isn't that interesting? Well, a lot of the comments didn't marry up with that. Just about how he didn't look great under the high ball, and just his chip-ins on defense. Is that a little bit of, well, because they're so bad, or because they have been so bad, any success you see out of him is blown out of proportion?
I would never go so far as to say that like he's back, but when you've invested extremely heavily financially in a single player,
he's back, you'd have to be on the wing.
To invest so heavily in a player and have him deliver so little thus far, like today was a massive step forward and positive signs that perhaps they might get something resembling some kind of return on the investment.
And on that note, Tyler said Val is about as useful as an amputee under the high ball tonight.
when did he send that message too? It could have been in the first half, which was
Jamie said, can they please show the under eights at halftime so we can get our footy fix? Liam said the play where Holmes threw a pass behind a certain to score O'Neill onto the chest of Kotrick, who promptly dropped it, sums up these teams perfectly.
That was exactly the thing when I was talking about the squandering good ball situation from the Cowboys.
Have we got a pronunciation update on Kotrick's name?
It's like Chotrick, isn't it?
Jesus.
Look, I'm all for players finding out that that they're... they've got this heritage and then it's great, but I think I first heard this on ABC Grandstand last year sometime, and no one, and I kind of dismissed it because No one on television ever did it until recently. And I remember on Grandstand they were talking about it, and it was a game. It was a Canberra game I was listening to, and someone in the team on the radio at the time, who I forget what it was, they were like, oh, you know, yeah, it's actually meant to be pronounced like, you know, it's like, you know, Serbian or whatever, you know, and it's meant to be pronounced, you know, Chotrich.
Which again, it can probably be fairly, you know, fairly well relied upon most of the time. But you don't want to get into one of those situations again where you've got somebody who comes out and said, this is how this is pronounced, and then somebody else goes, oh, yeah, no, it's not. It's my name, and I don't.
Yeah, end of the day. Yeah. End of the day, they just need to do, you know, like what John Anik was telling us that he does for the UFC. He will literally go to a fighter in the week leading up to a fight and say, how do you pronounce your name? Clunk. Get his iPhone out, record.
That's
the the fighter will say it the way it is, and then you just drill that, because that's the fucking originator. That's the source of the
spot on. And the last comment on that one we'll give to Peter in the Facebook group. He said Cowboys are a 30-point better team at their home ground, Leichhardt Oval.
I think a lot of these were first half comments, because I mean they did ultimately score 30 points, so. But halftime was like, it was like, what, 6-6 or something?
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. All right. Well, in that case, game's done. That's full time for the episode 391. Oof. As always, you can follow us and interact with us in a myriad of ways. And if you want to get all the links to our Patreon, where there's tons of bonus features for patrons, if you want to get the links to all our social medias, particularly our Facebook group. And there's been a good fucking solid influx of new bodies to the Facebook group. I mean, you notice as well.
Chirping new bodies too. Get in there and get amongst it.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's great. Like it's we've added like 100 this season at least already, and I mean it's fucking early days, so great to see.
And might I say,
raise the bat for 1,000.
The quality of these people is fucking outstanding.
Yeah. Yep. I agree.
Put it out there as well, because it's been a while since we've done this, and it's not because anyone's being a dick about it. No fucking clickbait. And no unfunny fucking bullshit football memes.
We're going to find that this year Origin's back in the middle of the year, so we're probably going to go through that 6-week period
with Origin fucking threads.
Where we get dumb shit from generally Queensland supporters.
Yeah.
Generally Super Grover, frankly.
Well, you know what? If our Facebook group is a minute silent, Super Grover's yelling out.
Yeah. Oh, all day every day. Yeah.
Fuck it all. That's the ultimate insult. Like,
and he's not just yelling out like woo or anything, like, he's yelling out something like really bad, like, you know, boring in a minute silence.
Queensland.
He's that tone deaf. He'd be like, hey, who fucking died?
Yeah. So anyway, if you want links to all those things, go to thisweekinleague.com/links and you will be linked to all of the relevant locations. If you'd like to support the show, make sure you drop us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Tell a friend. And with this influx of people to the Facebook group in particular, they're invited by a member whose name I recognize, you know, when the notification comes through. So good shit, adding your friends and everything too, guys. That's tremendous. And like, it's the best way to get new people in the group as well, because you're getting, you know, they're kind of pre-vetted at least on some level. I mean, like, I know that if I'm going to invite a friend into the Facebook group, they're not going to be one of these fucking drags that are a nightmare, you know, that I regret bringing in.
Yeah,
exactly. Now, memberships, by the time you're listening to this, memberships are closed. But the Patreon keeps on going. The hoodies are closed as well. Once we get delivery of the hoodies and the memberships, which should be, you know, like 2 to 3 weeks, then we'll roll out the next opportunity for you guys to grab something special. So thank you to everyone who grabbed a membership and grabbed a hoodie. And
appreciate you all.
And our Patreon ongoing month to month. You can jump on that one at any stage of the year, and there's some great benefits the higher up the pyramid you go. Anything else you want to add, fellas, before we wrap this one up?
Fantastic.
Are we running a pyramid scheme now?
Ours is a trapezoid.
Bernie Madoff did cark it.
Yeah, he did. Someone's got to fill that fucking that void.
Have you not actually like considered why we've asked you back this year? did you not peek up when Nate was getting you to sign all those documents? You know, podcast trustee. Everything's in your name now.
Lucky I signed your name.
Oh, yes. Anyway, that's it.
I'm from Campbelltown, remember?
Just put an X.
That's it. Campbelltown, they usually fucking quality. They usually put fingerprints on things, on documents, don't they? Righto, that's it, fellas. Talk to you on Wednesday.
All right.
Later.
See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.